listen to this.
You are listening to AWOL Radio on CKMS The Sound 100.3 FM in Waterloo.
Welcome to AWOL Radio. I am your host, Dan Keller, and we are joined today with former AWOL Radio co-host, a constant target of state agents and deplorable trolls, and an effective warrior for social justice, Alex Hundert. Today we are going to discuss issues around free speech and free expression in Canada, including the necessary limits and inherent responsibilities. Recently it came to light that another show at AWOL Radio's home community station, CKMS, wanted to have on a guest that has repeatedly published racist and misogynistic opinions. There were complaints received at the station, several Facebook battles, and a long discussion at the board level, which resulted in a consensus decision that the proposed guest be barred from CKMS airwaves. The proposed guest was blogger Lawrence McCurry, who also writes for Toronto-based Your Ward News. In his writings, Larry describes Syrian refugees as, quote, invaders, who are 90% of young men of fighting age, unquote, from a, quote, hodgepodge of Middle Eastern countries, unquote. He also writes of European countries being, quote, swamped and invaded by Muslims, unquote, and he states, quote, now I'm not saying all Muslims want to take over or are evil people, unquote. He then writes about the, quote-unquote, flood of refugees in Paris and Germany, taking part in a, quote, cultural genocide, unquote, of Europeans. In his writings reflecting misogyny, Larry refers to feminists as, quote, feminazis, unquote, and, quote, Marxist she-hags, unquote. Among other things, Larry defends his editor at Your Ward News, James Sears, who is quoted in his own paper saying that, quote, a lot of women enjoyed being slapped across the face, roughed up, and sexually ravaged after provoking a man, unquote. And when speaking about a feminist who challenged him, he said, quote, the right man had not yet domesticated this feral shrew, unquote. Sears also uses the term femi-Marxist to describe the woman. Sears, who considers himself a quote-unquote masculinity guru and goes by the nickname Dimitri the Lover, had his medical license revoked in 1992 after being found guilty of sexual impropriety and misconduct relating to several female patients. I've attached a few images of Larry's articles on the summary page for this piece. When confronted on Facebook with his own words, Larry responded, quote, I stand by what I wrote, unquote. As mentioned, Larry also writes for the Your Ward News media outlet, a news outlet that has published anti-Semitic, anti-immigrant, white nationalist, and misogynistic writings, among other bigotries. Your Ward News has also printed endorsements of openly white nationalists and neo-Nazi political candidates and political parties, like the New Constitution Party of Canada. While Your Ward News supporters have claimed it is a satirical paper, the website yourwardnewswatch.wordpress.com has documented the hateful content released. In response to a resident-operated campaign launched in the Beaches neighborhood of Toronto, where the paper was being mass-mailed, MP Judy Foote, the Minister of Public Safety in the federal government, cancelled the contract Canada Post had with Your Ward News, ending the junk mailing of the paper. More information is available in the links at the bottom of this show's summary page. Getting back to the discussion Alex and I have on today's AWOL Radio, the host of the conspiracy show that wanted to interview Lawrence McCurry, as well as Larry himself, and several digital compatriots tried to turn this into a free speech issue. And now here we are.
Alex and I have, of course, worked together for a long time, and we've also been discussing free speech for a long time, both of us being targeted by the police, by the state, for things that we have said and written. We're just going to hop right into it. Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, Dan. It's nice to be back on AWOL Radio. Thank you for having me.
You were part of this issue that came up at CKMS, where one of our hosts announced on his Facebook page that he was going to be hosting Lawrence McCurry, Larry McCurry, from Your Ward News. CKMS received a bunch of complaints saying, this is a bad idea, don't have this guy on the air. And you posted on our host's Facebook page to tell him, don't have this guy on the air.
I've known Larry for, fortunately, getting, since the Occupy days anyways, and he is kind of one of these pseudo-journalists or wannabe journalist bloggers that kind of showed up in Toronto in the wake of the Occupy movement, preceding the rise of the MRA movement. as far as I've ever been able to tell, their only purpose is to disrupt grassroots movements and insert this kind of, like, what has become known as the alt-right discourse of poor me, hard done by white man sort of story.
Mm.
As degenerate and unfavorable and kind of, as, you know, some of these other characters in Toronto are, like Greg Renew, for example.
Sure.
Larry's actually the worst. Not Greg, but some of these other guys have threatened me before, which is fine. But I watched Larry threaten Sammy Atkins' family at the march, and we had to physically remove him from that march.
Mm.
And he's there pretending to be a journalist. So that's the kind of class the guy has. The paper he works for, this is the same paper that Canada Post refuses to carry, it's so bad, where some of the people who have been duped into subscribing and advertising over the years have gone public about, like, they have been tricked into supporting this thing. And I looked into it far enough to know that the guy who runs the paper, I can't even remember his name right now.
James Sears. Yeah.
In the paper he has published about his admiration for Adolf Hitler, you know, and all of these things about this kind of, this alt-right, kind of like a proto-early alt-right discourse that these guys have been pushing for years. The Hitler stuff is worse than the alt-right stuff. It's all just enough that having, you know, I was at CKMS during the transition from a campus station to a community station. And I just, neither the campus nor grassroots communities are places that should tolerate this kind of nonsense. And granted, we need free speech. It's important, sort of. But there's nobody stopping people from saying things. People are being stopped from using privately owned community channels to distribute repulsive, offensive messages. And I just think that while I would prefer the state not to be the arbiter of such matters, we also have laws that mean no one's going to punch these people in the face for saying stupid shit. And if we can't do that, then there have to be other mechanisms to stop them from using the public airwaves or pretending to have a real newspaper. That's my rant for the morning.
That's a very good point. As a private corporation, Radio Waterloo Inc., run by a board of directors, board of directors is responsible for what happens to the radio station, and there's policies that we've set and policies that we follow. And we've decided that things that the guest, Larry McCurry, has said in the past, he has said racist, misogynistic things. It's written, he keeps it on his own webpage. You can look at the things that he says. Recently, when I challenged him on, he said, I stand by what I say. And the radio station said, this guy can't come on the air. It's going to hurt us as a radio station. It puts us at risk of Human Rights Commission issues. It puts us at risk of alienating the communities that we serve. And what I said, like, no one is stopping these people from having discussions. They just can't have them over our airwaves.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say that I wrote an email to the station, and I did get a response from one of the directors saying that, yes, we agree that this violates our anti-oppression policy. And I replied being like, I'm glad you have an anti-oppression policy. In my original letter, I had talked about taking legal action. Granted, that may have been somewhat of a bluff, but it is one of the mechanisms that are available. I actually think it would have been a lot of work, but we could have filed a motion getting an injunction against the station to not have him on the air based on human rights issues. And whether we would have won once that came before the court, the temporary injunction would have stopped him from being on the air that day, which is what I was suggesting could be done if the station didn't exhibit better judgment. The court is one of the tactics available to us, and if there are cops that will stop me from punching these, I have no problem using the court. And I know that sounds really harsh. I just listened to myself say that. But I agree that in most human interactions, the way to deal with the underlying racism that we're in an era of calling out and trying to rectify, the best tactic we have is usually love and patience. But when you were dealing with crash like McCurry, and like I might suggest that this radio host who wanted to host him appears to be as well, love and patience aren't the answer for everything.
Somebody made the point of, guys, why are you fighting? Why are you fighting over this? Why can't we just work together? Look at all the energy you're spending fighting each other. We should be focused. We should be focusing on the government. We should be focusing on the bigger issues, is what this person said.
That's kind of a red herring in this specific matter, like, because no one's talking about investing a tremendous amount of energy into organizing against these guys, which may be problematic. I imagine whoever had to organize to make it so Cup W, so that Canada Post could stop delivering their brag, wish they could have done something better with their days.
Yeah.
But at some point, this kind of discourse is dangerous. Whether or not specific columns that Larry writes qualify legally as hate speech, there is no question that this discourse leads to violence against the most marginalized people in our communities, the people who are identified in ways that they come from parts of our communities that have historically been the most subjected to violence. And it is preposterous for us to continue to tolerate it. And I'm happy to flip the script if necessary to just say enough of this.
I'd agree. I do have other things to do other than deal with people that claim to be fighting for good, but then put out a discourse which brings racism, which causes racism. And it might be looked at from the Human Rights Commission, if something were to go to it, that it is actually racist. Larry paints pictures of refugees using words like so-called refugees, or that there's an invasion of refugees and all this other, what I call racist speech, and other people definitely identify as things that lead to racism.
I don't even think you need to use those qualifiers. Any academic definition of racism would include this. Many people have been watching the American election cycle. Just because Donald Trump says he is not racist and says he respects women doesn't make it so. And this free speech nonsense leads to crap. Like having Donald Trump running for president. Give me, what community do we want to be a part of? That's really what this comes down to. And granted, I'm in Thunder Bay and there's enough racism up here. I don't want to be dealing with Waterloo either, but it kind of pisses me off once I actually start intellectually engaging with the way these people have successfully fought for space in the broader public discourse, and that they're able to dupe folks like the CCLA into supporting them worries me.
Thanks for bringing up the CCLA. The CCLA did write a letter around this incident.
LA. They supported me when I was, you know, thrown in jail for saying things in public.
Right.
But nobody's throwing these guys in jail. That's not happening to them. It's like, it's not a free speech issue because nobody is threatening them with legal consequences.
I would agree with you there. I support the CCLA. But they did put out a letter signed by their executive council that discusses the issues around Your Ward News, which is the paper that Larry writes for, and it questions what happened in how the paper was stopped being mass mailed or junk mailed out to an entire community, an entire neighborhood in Toronto, you know, where dozens if not hundreds of people filed complaints, and an MP, a Liberal MP, who is responsible for Canada Post ultimately, said, you're right, you know, this paper's garbage. It's inciting racism and is not acceptable to be put out as an advertisement, as a junk mail through Canada Post. And the CCLA said, well, that's somewhat troubling. The government stepping in to stop a publication that has not yet been determined to be hateful. Apparently, there's a Human Rights Commission investigation into the paper, but it hasn't determined if the paper is hateful or not yet. It hasn't made its ruling. But this MP stepped in and said, no, this is hateful garbage and Canada Post won't be delivering it. And they cut the contract. And CCLA stepped in, the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, said, that's troubling. But they didn't really say, they didn't determine whether the paper was hateful or not. They didn't make any, they just said it was troubling that this happens. It seems that the process to which this is happening is not really a good process. I've asked the CCLA for some clarification on this, so I will be following up, of course. But yeah, they did write, they questioned the decision that the MP made on a freedom of expression basis.
And the way you frame that now, it doesn't sound as bad as the way I remember it, but it still worries me because I think if you look back just last week, the week before, there were multiple incidents going on kind of simultaneously at University of Toronto around this professor who was refusing to apologize for some anti-trans statements that he had made, and some stuff, I guess, within the students' union around anti-black stuff and racist campus responses to the Black Lives Matter movement. And it resulted in a bunch of free speech hoopla at U of T. When I think about this kind of wave of free speech hoopla, it's the new, a year and a half ago, and it's not new, this stuff all happens in cycles, but it's the same as when the Tea Party and Tea Party-like incarnations in Canada, you know, we have our own versions of these things. They just don't kind of have cool names like the Tea Party movement. Like, what do we call Ezra's followers, you know? Like, so the Tea Party's quoting Martin Luther King. These idiots talking about free speech is like the Tea Party quoting Martin Luther King. It's a distraction. It's like when Batman throws smoke bombs and then punches you in the face while you can't see through the smoke. I'm worried we're about to get punched in the face by the alt-right, you know?
Mm.
And that's why it's dangerous, and that's why I worry about the CCLA engaging in any way, in giving this, in invalidating these concerns. I think they should have waited, because maybe the judge comes out and says, no, this is okay. That's when the CCLA should step in and say, no, this isn't okay. There has to be some limits on this. I worry about what position they will take if the chips were to come down on this issue. Not that I think your war news is that important.
Right.
But, like, if I lived in that neighborhood, I would stop postal workers from delivering it.
Well, it's being sent to 300,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Or homes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of distribution for something that, when you look at it, is clearly misogynistic, clearly racist, anti-Semitic.
Right. Let me put it real clearly. If the postal workers kept delivering that paper, that one paper in one region of Toronto, I would withdraw my support for the door-to-door postal campaign.
Sure.
I think some sort of decency in our community-level discourse is more important than door-to-door mail servers.
Hmm. People make this a free speech issue, but what about the freedom to be able to live in your community without being harassed by hate mail?
Mm-hmm.
There's other freedoms other than the freedom of expression that we have in this country that we're also supposed to be able to enact, and people seem to think that this freedom of expression overrides other freedoms.
And I would also just suggest that their freedom to distribute a newspaper, to force union workers to distribute a newspaper, is not a freedom of expression issue. That is a bizarre extension of that right.
It is. And that
my right to freedom of movement doesn't extend to be able to, like, go into your bedroom and watch you have sex with your partner. There are obvious limits on things we call on so-called freedoms. Like, really, 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 really obvious. And this is a stupid discussion. At a discursive level, the does this crap count as free speech that should be protected is a stupid discussion. I know we're having it because it was precipitated by the discussion coming up already.
Right.
And we're participating in it. But
yeah,
we shouldn't have to have this discussion. No professional radio station would have these idiots on the air.
Well, what's a professional radio station? There's a lot of, I have a term as racist radio, morning hosts that talk about some of the things and some of the discourse right. that Larry brings.
Okay, there is plenty of racist radio in Toronto. They ain't had these idiots on. They aren't taking this position.
It's true.
Even Ezra isn't defending these guys.
Even Ezra Levant, the so-called heroic champion of free speech
even
himself.
Even Reynolds hasn't come out in support of these guys. Like, even their own idiot friends aren't supporting them. So this radio host now has his people in Waterloo supporting him. I don't think they understand who this Larry guy and who the War News is. Their brethren in Toronto don't support them anymore, as far as I can tell. At a Black Lives Matter event, I actually approached some of these other bloggers and asked them if they knew that the War News, that the guy who runs the War News is like a Hitler acolyte. And they were like, oh my God, I had no idea it was anything like that. I thought it was just satire. And they were like, no, that's not cool at all. Like, these guys who are some of the most deplorable people I've ever met think this is just deplorable.
That says something. That's...
I mean, not always. I mean, I don't agree that the enemy of my enemy is my right. I don't want to subscribe to that logic. I just think in this case, it does say something.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it very much does. You said satire in there, and that's one of the things these guys are hiding behind. One of the images that was posted in the newsletter was of Donald Trump dressed in a Hitler uniform, gassing Judy Foote, the minister, that she was in a gas chamber, and there was the on and off button, and the chamber got filled with green, you know, gas. Judy Foote, the liberal minister. And then that satire was explained to me on the Facebook feed of why it was satire. So, like, hiding behind satire as free speech, where do you fall there?
I hadn't seen that cartoon. I'm just trying to deconstruct it all in my head, so I was a little distracted.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I should
have. No. Put it this way. Satire. Okay, so Mad Magazine. If Mad Magazine ran a cartoon, it had images of Ku Klux Klan or Nazis, and people were doing mean things to them, and that's funny. That's not racist. If Mad Magazine ran a strip where white protesters are protesting against Black Lives Matter and calling them racist names, and that's funny, that is racist. And I would suggest that your War News of satire is very clearly in the camp of the left. They're not making fun of racism. They're racist.
Right.
They're telling racist jokes.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, a racist joke is racist. It's not like, oh, I was only joking. Decadist. Like, what the hell I was talking about?
Oh, it's satire. But no. You're saying what you want to happen. That's like, it's not really satire.
It's like trying to argue that blackface is okay for some reason. Like, I don't even understand the argument anymore. It's so antiquated. Like, I'm actually sitting here trying to remember what is the argument in favor of blackface is okay, and I just, like, I don't know what that argument is. And I'm trying to think of what is an argument that somehow satire is exempted from free speech standards.
Right.
Or community decency standards. And I don't know. I don't know what that example is.
One thing that's...
And so let's bring this back to community decency, actually.
Sure.
Free speech is the red herring. It's the straw man. The issue is community standards. And your station, while it could, wouldn't air pornography. It wouldn't, like, blatant pornography. It wouldn't air excessive violence. You know, like, it just wouldn't do those things. It wouldn't air content that denigrated. It wouldn't air that type of offensive, denigrating content.
Well, there's literally...
The offensive content your station airs is controversial stuff that asks questions, not denigrating things.
Well, there's literally laws that we can't, and then we also have our own policies that...
Then it's the policy that area we're talking about, not the legal one.
Hmm.
And the weak granted... I'm the jerk who threatened to take legal action, but it's partially because I know how corporate board structures work. Like,
yeah.
I assessed my tactical option.
No, and I mean that the board did agree that the speaker, Larry McCurry, is likely to say racist things or things that will bring hate to already marginalized people. And the board made that decision by majority. Actually, no one was like, no, this guy needs to go on air. We got one message sent to the radio station saying, you better put Larry McCurry on air or we'll shut you down. Now I thought this was a free speech issue. And they're threatening to shut down a community radio station who refused to allow its resources to be used to pass on what it has determined to be racist content. I don't think people understand free speech.
Right.
Or free expression.
And that's what we were, that you hit it on the head, is people who are using free speech arguments to do things like make space to legitimize anti-trans positions or anti-Black Lives Matter positions or to question indigenous rights and anti-colonial politics and, to question free speech, to question whether or not this is indigenous land, and just people who are trying to use free speech to basically be assholes, to be racist, misogynist, whiny white man crying assholes. And it's just, it doesn't have to be tolerated. Like, we don't have to take these people seriously.
But they do occupy space in our neighborhoods and our communities. And they try to expand it.
Right. And what I'm suggesting is they are using, in the same way that I used the threat of an injunction as a tactic to take space away, they are using the red herring of free speech to hold space for their vile position and their vile ideology. And their goal is for that ideology to be infectious and to spread. They are seeking power.
Well,
I'm not, quite frankly.
Now, one thing Larry McCurry posted on Facebook, one of his last posts, there's a lot of threads going on from this host's page and with Larry. One of the last things he wrote was, free speech is not hate speech. The term hate speech is a cultural Marxist control method for closing down free and honest discourse.
I can't refute the claim that the term hate speech comes out of Marxist scholarship and the way we use it. I can't refute that because I haven't looked into it, but it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. And I want to come back to he may have a point. His point would be, they say free speech, we say hate speech, may not be the right conversation.
Sure.
And if that is what he's saying, I think the conversation is decency and community standards and what kind of world we want to live in. And the kind of world I want to live in, frankly, doesn't include these people.
Hmm.
I don't know what to do with that. Logic and perhaps decency, which I'm arguing in favor of, would suggest some kind of transformative cultural experience. Transformative justice is a difficult thing to attain that lots of really great people are working on. And I think those are radically transformative projects are the way past this kind of nonsensical free speech impasse. That's what I think.
And I
remember what the question was.
I'm having problems actually thinking about how those things would happen when the people were having this discourse on Facebook, for instance, point out, well, here are the things we think are racist. No one says these aren't racist. People just say, I stand by what I say. Yeah, I don't even know how to really think about that transformative level of...
Oh, to think about that part?
Well, how do we get to that? How do we get to people that are like, no, you just don't care about the issue and you're not smart enough to understand it. That's why you don't get that this is a free speech issue. Like, how do you...
That, I think, is about more holistically long-term kind of culturally transformative approaches that include everything from how we do media to how we do education to how we do politics. And seeing these things and recognizing the interconnection of these things, right? And at that stage, we were actually talking about, you know, societal change at a really fundamental level. What that looks like I said, there are better than me with answers to some of those questions, and I would encourage people who are interested in looking to those answers, like, don't listen to f***ing white guys. Enough. Here we are, two white guys. I'm not worried about it, but I'm just like, enough. There's better answers out there.
I still am going to post this show, even though we are two white guys talking about white guys, about free speech.
You are listening to AWOL Radio on CKMS 100.3 FM in Waterloo Region, soundfm.ca on the web. We will now get to the second half of our show with a continuation of our interview with social justice activist Alex Hundert on the limits and responsibilities around free speech and free expression.
Well, and I want to tilt the kettle a little more. Is it, so what gets to this point, right? Like, what gets to the point where someone is even in a position to have enough space to try to take more or to lend the space to something like this? I don't know this other radio host, and I haven't listened to his show much, but I have a bit of a sense of what his content is, and it sounds like it's kind of like, you know, verging on right-wing, like, definitely conspiracy theory stuff.
Oh, it's a conspiracy theory show.
And, you know, libertarian right conspiracy is the bulk of what conspiracy theory culture is or has become, and this seems to conform to that. It seems a lot like Alex Jones stuff, more of a focus on, you know, perhaps environmental issues than immigration ones, though I could be wrong.
He praised Alex Jones on his show today.
Okay, nobody who praises Alex Jones should be on your radio station, Dan. Maybe I'm pitching too far left, so to speak, when I say this, but, like, that is deplorable. Alex Jones is, like, a vicious, virulent hate-monger who encourages, like, openly encourages violence. His show is right on the verge of, like, not just violating human rights standards, but actually being criminal, and they make a ton of money selling that stuff. So they have high-priced lawyers, and he's way smarter than he looks, and he dances the line pretty well. Like, he's not going to say anything illegal on his radio station, or, I don't know, maybe there have been a bunch of attempts to spot him, and by being able to afford better lawyers, he's beaten them. I don't know. Talk about wasting time, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to back up. Like, I think Alex Jones is deplorable. Although I'll admit to it, his show when I was first getting into activism decade plus ago, some of the things that he was talking about, trade deals, he was talking about things that got through to me. But then he started talking about all this nonsense around chemtrails, around all these. Like all these huge, huge, completely unprovable conspiracies, and then got into the racist dialect. That's when I was like, whoa, your analysis of trade deals has some bearing, but what the hell's the rest of this garbage?
There are lots of reasons to be opposed to trade deals.
Sure.
Some of them are racist ones.
Right.
And like, Jones and people, Alex Jones, Donald Trump, Glenn Beck, they have ideas on trade policies and on foreign policies. They have racist views on trade and foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
We do not need to, or maybe it's too late. Maybe, I was about to say, we do not need to accept that kind of deplorable racism has its place in the public discourse. It deserves equal space and fair and balanced treatment. Mm. I don't believe that kind of deserves that.
Mm.
But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's not that we need to realize that we don't need to do that as a society, but rather you and I, Dan, that need to realize that what are we talking about? We've already done that. And so in that case, maybe Larry McCurry is right, and maybe this radio guy is right. Maybe in the Canada we live in, free speech does include the right to propagate hateful, vile garbage.
But free speech doesn't trump other freedoms that we have, or so-called.
I don't think it should. But what I'm suggesting is maybe we're wrong. Maybe we've come to a point right of angry white men to say whatever the f*** they want is actually more important than the right of people to feel safe in their own community.
Well, maybe that's a question we should put to the show host when they're talking about this as a free speech issue.
And not just feel safe, but actually be safe.
Be safe.
I think you and I have at least suggested, if not even kind of shown in a couple cases, that this stuff actually leads to real violence. It's not hard to look at the crossover between free speech and Second Amendment stuff in the States and to look at the way the same discourses are used about the right of angry people to say horrible things about minorities or to shoot black people. You know, it's just the same garbage. The same garbage. It's the same trash people who pretend there's no such thing as date rape, you know?
It's incredible the intersections that have come together that I've noticed coming together around this issue. People that are posting on the host's page and looking at what they're about. It's a broad range of people that have come on this, but there are some like baseline connections between these people. And one of the things seems to be a complete distrust, maybe not distrust, complete misunderstanding of like the scientific method, what it means to be able to show evidence for a theory to actually prove something versus to just show things that may not be relevant to the actual hypothesis that you have. There's these chemtrail peoples, and that's what this one show is mostly about, chemtrails. And then there's this like George Soros controls the left crowd. Then there's this Agenda 21 crowd. There's just like a distaste for actual like what evidence is, what's relevant, what's adequate to back up your evidence and your hypothesis. And then they bring this to a free speech issue, and they don't really understand what's going on. And I think I've already said that today. Like, there's just a misunderstanding or a non-understanding or a willful ignorance about what free speech is. I don't think it gives you the right to say horrible things. I think whenever people do say these things over the air, whenever they are written in papers, there's a big reaction. And we can see that with Your Ward News. Dozens, if not hundreds, of people wrote that received the paper that was forced mailed to them, that was junk mailed to them, received this paper, and they're saying, this is racist garbage that is making me feel unsafe in my own neighborhood. I think that would happen wherever this paper was junk mailed to, but maybe as you say, maybe we're wrong on the issue.
I would hope so, and I know one of the things they'll use to refute these claims is that it's silly for people to feel dangerous, but I want to think about what racist graffiti, or actually any graffiti, makes people in a neighborhood feel like. Let's go outside of the racism. Let's pretend you're rich, and all of a sudden there's gang graffiti in your neighborhood. Mm. There is graffiti in your neighborhood that is antagonistic to you. Anti-gentrification graffiti, for example, is put in neighborhoods that are being gentrified for the purpose of making the gentrifiers feel unwelcome. In the same way that when you spray paint a swastika in a neighborhood, the reason to put it there is to make Jews feel unwelcome. Hmm. Or black people, or immigrants, or whoever the people in that neighborhood are that you don't want there. That's why you're putting it there.
That's a good point.
And so that the message that sends to people when you see that in your neighborhood is, there is an element in this neighborhood, some shady element that doesn't want us here. But they're not willing to put their faces on it. They go around it dark in the night.
Hmm. Yeah, and that's
in a newspaper that is coming to your door, into your house, the proper assumption would be that this is part of the community's values. People are putting their names to it. They're not even hiding. They're not afraid. They're willing to say this stuff. And that must make people feel even more afraid. So I would suggest this has a bigger impact than spray painting explicit threats in neighborhoods, because it normalizes the behavior, and that's the part that we have to say no to.
People tried to opt out. They tried to talk to Canada Post, say, we don't want this. And Canada Post says, well, when we mass mail something, everyone gets it.
I know for a fact that Waterloo is a community that various neighborhoods in Waterloo and in Kitchener do, you know, there have been waves of Nazi graffiti in Kitchener-Waterloo over the years, like spreading out from the time I lived there and before, like through to now.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what kind of overlap there are between listenership and the type of people who are spray painting swastikas around. You know, I wonder these things.
With the posts that are on his page and some of the comments, it wouldn't surprise me. It also didn't really surprise me that this chemtrails, George Soros controls the left, Agenda 21 host also would look at free speech in this way that he's accepted versus community responsibility.
A show on what's wrong with conspiracy theories and how it perpetrates a fundamental misunderstanding of the way power works to various aims and ends is a different conversation from this one, I think.
It is. I mean, it is.
I don't need to have an opinion about chemtrails to not want a racist piece of shit on the community radio. However, I have such a strong opinion about racist pieces of shit. This chemtrails guy who's bringing him on the radio, I don't think he should be on the radio either. And like, surely that there isn't, like, that's frankly none of my business anymore because I don't live there. I'm not on the radio, you know. The whole thing's kind of sad, and it's been so long since I've been on the show, right? I wish we could be talking about the things I actually care about on a day-to-day basis. I mean, I'm working on, and in the Thunder Bay, working on Indigenous youth suicide issues and stuff like that. I'd much rather spend time telling people in Southern Ontario how they can support a better future for Indigenous youth in Northern Ontario.
And
instead we're talking about this.
And I do want to do those shows as well. Then why are you doing this show? Why are we taking this time to do?
A, because we got baited into it. B, because for some reason these guys get under my skin and yours. Like,
yeah.
It's not the first time you and I have been baited into this.
No.
But the real reason is because we both see it as dangerous. We both are able to recognize the way seemingly harmless, soft, racist conspiracy theories lead to the acceptance of a worldview that paints people with some of the most systemic privilege and power as somehow being the victims and then empowers them to try to take power back. It's just really gross. And this is all part of that. And it is actually dangerous. Actually, absolutely dangerous, and that is what necessitates intervention. And I guess fourthly, is that, as I said in the email I wrote to the station, Larry, you know, and as you mentioned, one of the main things he writes about is immigrants. When I saw him threatening people, this was before people were talking about the Syrian refugee crisis in the same way. It was Syrian teenagers that he was trying to threaten. We had to remove him from that situation with Sami Yassin's family. And if these people are going to threaten violence against people and make people feel unsafe, I don't think it should be refugees and women of color who should have to take them on in public. I think that part of anti-racism is recognizing the spaces where, you know, to use some of the parlance of the day, where we've got to collect our own people. These are idiot white men, and some other white men need to shut them the up somehow. It would be nice if they just, like, listened to common decency and shut up for decency's sake. That would be way better. That would be ideal.
Yeah, but you're right. It's not happening. And I do agree with you.
I apologize for any sloppy language in the way I said that.
We do have the responsibility to... One thing I've learned over the years, people that are already targeted with the most levels of oppression don't necessarily have the time to continually take on, well, racists, to take on trolls, to take on all this. I have more of that time because I don't have to deal with the same oppressions that others do day to day. So I do have more time, and I put that in quotes, to deal with these things. And I also find it to be part of my responsibility is, like, yeah, as you said, we should be collecting our own.
That phrase sounds weird.
It does.
Either your or my mouth. The sentiment is kind of what I mean. To kind of use more of the buzzwords so that they may trigger connection in people who are listening, is that what you and I don't have to deal with on a day-to-day basis is the stress of microaggressions directed against us every time we turn on the TV.
Yes.
Or step foot out of the house or open a book.
Right.
And therefore, what you are calling more time, whatever that ineffable quality created by not having to deal with that, we have more of that.
Yeah, okay. I like that clarification there. That is a very good way of thinking of it. No, I feel that frustration, and I feel it. We've had to deal at our radio station. The only time we get complaints are when there are, basically, it's these the conspiracy theorists that then take their ideas and bring it into a, like, they racialize them. They make it an issue of, like, it's hard to explain, but a lot of them are anti-government. A lot of them are anti-police. A lot of them are anti-global trade deals.
Now, remember, though, the anti-police, let's go back to Alex Jones, because he's kind of the king of these guys right now. Let's come up with a better metaphor. That's a patriarchal metaphor, but whatever. He is anti-police because the police are the ones who are going to come and take your gun.
Mm.
Not because the police are the ones who put poor people in jail. Not because the police are the ones who protect private and corporate property. Because the police are the ones who are going to take your gun.
Mm.
Again, this is the enemy of my enemy is by no means necessarily my friend.
Right.
And I have some of the same mixed feelings. I, like you, at the same period, around the same issues, was listening to Alex Jones. He tipped me off on the Security and Prosperity Partnership. I heard about it from his show.
Yeah.
Which I started listening to because I had been listening to, I forget what it's, Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
Coast to Coast Radio, which is all alien conspiracy. And so
yeah.
I was listening to Coast to Coast in my early 20s. I kind of loved that show. Somehow I went looking for more conspiracy theory stuff, and I found Alex Jones. He turned me on to the SVP, and then within a couple of weeks of listening to the show, I was like, wow, this guy says horrible things about Mexicans and black people.
Yeah.
Like, this is gross.
Yeah.
And I stopped listening. And there is a fundamental difference between coast-to-coast AM conspiracy theories and, you know, chemtrail-like conspiracy theories, for example, that are harmless, and some of them may be real. I don't want to have the conversation right now about whether or not I believe aliens have landed on Earth. Like, I don't want to, like, we're not doing
that. We don't, that's not our talk today. That's not our talk.
But there is a way to have that conversation that does not violate, that does not put people at risk, that does not foster dangerous, violent, populist, racist discourse, that does not foster what in the 19th century would have been called a nativist discourse.
Hmm.
You know, it doesn't need to do that. And Coast to Coast AM, as far as I can tell, doesn't do any of that stuff. And it's, well, I could be wrong. It's probably been a decade since I've listened to either of them. So I think that something happened during the Occupy movement where people got in the practice of letting anyone say anything inside serious social organizing spaces.
Hmm.
And that was a mistake. And we still haven't undone it. The fact that the conspiracy theory show on the community station wants to bring on some racist Nazi guy is an outcome of, I think, that kind of politics. Like, I'm not sure these two things were always interconnected in the same way. I don't know that it, I could be wrong. I should do my research. No, I should.
No.
It's interesting to, the question I was about to ask is, before 9/11.
Yeah.
And the rise of the modern alt-right, was the conspiracy theory movement right-wing proto-fascist and racist?
Well,
before 9/11. Well, I don't know. I wasn't paying attention then.
True, we were. I mean, there's always the, you know, conspiracies back to whatever, JFK and aliens and all that. there's also, like, the, you know, chemtrails conspiracy started in 98, 99. Anyways, this show is supposed to be about free speech, and we've gone a little off topic. Although I did want to bring it back before we go is today I was listening to this conspiracy theory show that we have, and a lot of it was attacking you and I without naming us, which, whatever, I'll take that heat. But then one of the conspiracies that they believe in is this, you know, there was some sort of conspiracy at the G20 about agent provocateurs busting everything. And despite, you know, that there is no evidence and that we know what happened because, well, you went to jail for organizing it. And what this host said today on his radio show is, just like we know there was agent provocateurs and infiltrators in the G20 smashing things up, we know there will be infiltrators in the Syrian refugees to smash things up. Now, do you think that's appropriate language for community radio?
I think the suggestion on a community radio station that the suggestion is there will be random violent people mixed in with the Syrians.
That is the suggestion.
You can't call me racist because I'm specifically saying not all Syrians. But in this group of people, there will be this. And this is like one of the most classic ways that strategy is used to denigrate groups of people. Throughout history, that there will be this in this group. It's just always it. Like, whether it's there will be rapists and mean hombres coming to rape and sell drugs, or the infiltrators coming to smash things, or it's actually incoherent. I know what they really mean, and it is not the suggestion with the G20, which is demonstrably false. I have explained this many times. I haven't looked at the actual evidence. Was that the police planted provocateurs, which have never been actually caught in this country doing things, as far as I'm aware, at least not in the last 30 or 40 years. Every instance of people pointing to it, like Montebello, for example,
right,
we were both there, not as part of the same group, but we were both there.
Yeah.
And the insistence of the things people use as proof are just used wrong. They're just, it's a misunderstanding of what actually happened, and then people use that to propagate as evidence to support interest, suspicion, and then as time goes on, that suspicion gets reported as fact. And that's what happened here. But this is, to get back to the original point, is the suggestion with the G20 is that the police planted provocateurs so that they would have an excuse to clamp down on the protest. It's not true. The cars that were lit on fire, we know the people who lit them on fire. It's just ridiculous. They make the same time every time people burn something in this country, people are like, it has to be provocateurs, like any other pop-talk stuff.
Yeah.
Anyways. But the suggestion with the Syrians that they're making, they're not suggesting that the police are infiltrating rioters that will give who an excuse to do what. We know what they're suggesting, right? We know what they're suggesting. There is no place for that. There is no place for planting the seeds of fear. And, you know, as Yoda said, fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. This is the planting the seeds of the fear in this preposterous, absolutely unfounded suggestion is the seeds of hate. And he's just, why he's attaching it to this G20 thing is just, it's not actually making logical connections. Now that I've deconstructed that comparison, there is no logical connection. I understand the two separate things he's trying to say is that we were part of covering up the G20 conspiracy for some reason, and that people should not like Syrians. And he is just kind of mashed them together in a sentence. It's laziness that leads to the danger. I don't think that people who get stuck down the chemtrails rabbit hole are the nasty people the way Larry McCurry is. I know he's nasty because I watched him interact with the family of Sammy Adjim at that demo. And I've been face-to-face with him before. You know, he's different. I don't think people who go from being marijuana advocates to free speech advocates to supporting the men's rights movement, I don't think they start as horrible people. I think that's why this stuff is dangerous. It stuck people into a movement in steps. And by the time they get there, they're there legitimately. And you can't just, like, they're there.
Yeah.
Same with the G20 stuff. I know for a fact there was the only really alleged conspiracy was the one that they accused us of, because I've seen 10 boxes full of evidence and hundreds of hours of footage. Like, I don't know what to think. And if people want to just speculate because Alex Jones said something, then that's great, but we don't need to take you seriously.
And we don't need to allow it on community radio.
Well, yeah, part of not taking someone seriously is not, like, unless they're doing comedy, is to not give them the airwaves.
Yeah, well, we can keep going on this. And I think we should have a follow-up on conspiracy theories and social movements and impacts. And I think we should have another follow-up on impacts of continued land theft by the Ontario government up in Grassy Narrows and corporate poisoning of the land. And I'm kind of sorry that I brought you into this and distracted you from your other issues. But again, I feel it is important to take on these issues, especially when there's such a broad misunderstanding on it, on the issues of free speech and free expression and what that means.
Mm-hmm. And so to hammer home, like, a very conclusive point on free speech.
Yep.
Neither you or I, Dan, are saying that people should be arrested for saying these things in their private homes to each other. Nobody is saying that you should be arrested for posting this on a message board. But it shouldn't be on your Facebook wall. Facebook should pull it down. Hmm. And it shouldn't be on the community airwaves. That should not be allowed. It shouldn't be in the newspaper. That shouldn't be tolerated. A newspaper that wants to say that, we should not allow to be delivered in our community. And it is only a violation of free speech if you're actually not allowed to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fundamental misunderstanding, is no one is looking to take away the right to say these things in their own home. It's not thought police. It's not Minority Report. It isn't those things. It is you can't say that in public without consequences. And because we believe that you shouldn't get smacked in the face for saying stupid things, there are some things you shouldn't say in public.
Yeah.
And so no one's going to get smacked in the mouth for saying these things, neither by the police nor by private citizens. Therefore, there is no need to tolerate it on the airwaves. It's only a free speech issue when you can't say it in private. Should the government be able to say you can't protest in public? The limits to that kind of free expression, which is different than free speech, I believe. So really we're talking about freedom of expression, not freedom of speech, one thing. And in a freedom of expression context, it is trickier. But the issue is about, are you using power to make people feel unsafe? I think it actually comes down to that. I still firmly believe that these assholes should not be on the radio. That's my real point.
Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome, Ben. Thank you for having me and letting me vent a bit about this, because I got off of Facebook quickly, so I didn't want to spend too much time on it.
We'll keep people up to date on this, and I always appreciate more discussion on free speech, even though it does seem like a distraction a lot of the time to the issues that are affecting people that are already most targeted by the state capitalist colonial apparatus.
This has been a discussion with social justice warrior Alex Hundert on free speech and free expression and the necessary responsibilities that are attached to them. You can read more about Alex and the campaigns he is working on from his Twitter feed, at @alexhundert. Thank you for tuning in to AWOL Radio Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on soundfm.ca, 100.3 FM in Waterloo Region. Visit rabble.ca/podcast and click on the AWOL Radio link for our 200-plus show archive.